Welcome to the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour two of three tonight in the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander here with me tonight. Covered a lot of ground in the first hour, but still that much ground and more left to cover before the sand falls from the hourglass this evening. Coming up during the third hour tonight, our good friend and most frequent guest, Reverend Ted Pike, is going to be back on, the National Director of the National Prayer Network at truthtellers.org. Ted Pike coming back tonight to the show to take a much-deserved victory lap as a result of ABC's decision to cancel the GCB show from its primetime lineup. One and done. One season and done, despite all of their efforts to promote that monstrosity, the anti-Christian GCB. It's over. And Ted Pike will be on. We'll throw roses at him and all that good stuff. And also later tonight, author Justin Cottrell would be on. He's got a new book. It's going to be hard to top last week's show when we welcomed former DEA agent Robert Mazur to the program, a man who had infiltrated Pablo Escobar's Medellin cartel. But I tell you what a great show. What a great guest that was. We're going to do our best to match it here tonight as we go out to our affiliate stations across the country, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network, and of course, our flagship station in Memphis, AM 1380 WLRM. Anyway, Keith, I want to get to this very quick. This is just a real quick one. You know, we were all kind of bummed out that Ron Paul didn't get in there and nab the Republican nomination. But as Sam Bushman so rightly said on his radio program, the fabulous Liberty Roundtable show earlier this week, if people thought that one man in one election cycle would be able to reverse, you know, 60, 70, 80 years of decay and rot, well, they were being naive at best. And so, you know, he made a dent and he did well. But for all intents and purposes, his campaign has been suspended. But if you're looking for an alternative to Mitt Romney, there is still one out there, still one actively campaigning in some of the states that are still to have their primaries. California has not yet held its primary, and this guy's on the ballot there. He's a homosexual Jewish Republican, which I guess would be pretty typical of the modern-day incarnation of the GOP. He was apparently some sort of an appointee by Ronald Reagan. His name is Fred Karger, K-A-R-G-E-R, Fred Karger. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of this guy, but anyway, he's running against Romney and he wants your vote. Here is his a commercial that's airing in California. Here it is.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I'm Fred Karger. I worked for President Reagan for 7 years. Ronald Reagan stood up to the Soviet Union, and the wall came down. Now Mitt Romney is running for president. He recently caved into pressure from the far right and let an openly gay member of his campaign team go. He is weak and indecisive. How will Mitt Romney stand up to the leaders of Iran and North Korea if he won't stand up to a bigoted bully like Brian Fisher? I stand up to bullies, be they foreign or domestic. We need a tough, decisive leader, not a weak CEO. I'm running for President of the United States. I'm Fred Karger, and I approve this message.
Folks, that is not a parody. That is not some sort of a joke. That's the truth. I mean, this guy obviously knows that he can't win, but he is still on the ballot. He is still actively campaigning for votes. His name's Fred Karger. So there, Keith, you have it on one side of the political spectrum. You have buffoons like Al Sharpton saying that Mitt Romney is Hitler and that the modern-day GOP wants to exterminate all black people. And within his own party, you have fellas like this saying that Mitt Romney is being advised by bigots. I mean, and Mitt Romney is about as liberal as a Republican can come.
Well, you know, it's encouraging to hear. You know, red state American conservatives throughout America don't have a dog in the race anymore. But the homosexual Jewish community has a representative still alive and kicking out there trying to win the presidency at the Republican convention. You know, what's wrong with this picture? This is this is Alice in Wonderland America. I don't know what we can say that would give you an index of just how messed up America is right now than this. And I agree with him. Unlike Al Sharpton, Al Sharpton says that Mitt Romney is this virulent arch conservative. Not. This guy says he's weak. I tend to agree with Fred Carter. He is weak. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you had a Republican presidential candidate who strongly came out and said, yes, I'm not going to permit homosexuals to be in my cabinet. They're not going to be in my inner circle. I'm not lending an ear and heeding the counsels of the log cabin Republicans. This is, you know, what we deserve. This is what would appeal to his base. But, of course, being a Massachusetts Republican, this is the last thing that we're going to get from dear old Mitt Romney. Mitt is going to be the white Obama. I hate to say it, but, you know, you've heard it here first. This guy is going to be, you know, basically the same thing as Obama. He's maybe just a little bit, you know, 5 degrees off message or something. But if Mitt Romney gets it, you know, what do you think is going to happen to Obamacare when Obamacare was based on Romney care? Let's see what actually happens here. You know, big money mavens may be able to push him in that direction, and I hope it does, because if Obamacare is repealed, it'll be the first time that the liberals have gained something that actually has been repealed, you know, from school integration to busing to prayer in school to abortion. Forget it. Once the liberals get something changed in their favor, it sticks. We're going to see what Mitt Romney can do. I hope and pray he's just as strong as Al Sharpton thinks he is.
Well, Keith, what you said really resonated with me. I guess it should come as no surprise that Fred Carger has been officially endorsed by the Republican Jewish Coalition, a group that just the fact that it exists says something. But yes, they have endorsed him over they can meet in a phone booth. They've endorsed him over Mitt Romney. But the fact of the matter is that homosexual Jews still have a candidate in the race in the Republican Party, even if it's just in vain. Paleo conservatives such as us, a section of the population that represents at least 90% of the Republican base, we don't have one.
Not only do paleo conservatives not have a dog in the hunt anymore, neither do mainstream conservatives. You have a flaming neocon conservative in Mitt Romney, a guy that has kissed Godfather's ring at AIPAC, a guy who Bill Kristol is bragging is in the sack for them. That's the candidate, boy.
We're going to get back and we're going to tell you a story about the slaves that Tom forgot. Don't miss it.
There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
A backpack is more than just a bag. It's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
When the truth is found, to be... Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Going to tell you a story here, the likes of which, and this isn't unusual for this broadcast, you will only hear right here at the Political Cesspool radio program. And it's funny how we never, and I mean never, hear anything about this, ever. The slaves that time forgot. You won't read about this in very many history books. Here's the scoop. Because it's true is probably why. They came as slaves. Vast human cargo transported on British ships bound for the Americas. They were shipped by the hundreds of thousands and included men, women, and even the youngest of children. Whenever they rebelled or even disobeyed an order, they were punished in the harshest ways. Slave owners would hang their human property by their hands and set their hands and feet on fire as a form of punishment. They were burned alive and had their head placed on pikes in the marketplace as a warning to other captives. From 1641 to 1652, over 500,000 Irish slaves were killed by the English, and another 300,000 were sold actually into slavery. Ireland's population fell from 1.5 million to 600,000 in one single decade. Families were ripped apart. As the slave traders did not allow Irish dads to take their wives and children with them across the Atlantic. This led to a helpless population of homeless women and children. Britain's solution was to auction them off as well. During the 1650s, over 100,000 Irish children between the ages of 10 and 14 were taken from their parents and sold as slaves in the West Indies, Virginia, and New England. In this decade, again, the 1640 to 1650, 52,000 Irish, mostly women and children, were sold to Barbados and Virginia. Another 30,000 Irish men were transported and sold to the Irish bidder. The story goes on from there. It's a pretty elaborate, pretty long story. It's something that, you know, certainly we all knew happened. I mean, obviously blacks did not and never had a monopoly on slavery. Slavery was a practice, a horrible practice that afflicted all people. I mean, the very name itself, slaves, came from the Slavic people that were, victims of the practice. But unlike the black slaves, this chapter in the history of the Irish people does not define who they are, nor would they want it to. And they were hardly the only Europeans, as I mentioned, that were forced into slavery. But the purpose of this post, Keith, and the reason we're bringing it up tonight on the show, is to point out what the establishment has obviously forgotten or just conveniently overlooks.
Well, what it shows is that the Irish got over it, just like every other group that has been enslaved since the beginning of time has gotten over it, except for black people. And there is this news blackout that the educational establishment has enforced, the leftist educational establishment, that has, I guarantee you, 90% of Americans believing that only black people and black people alone were enslaved in the history of the world, and it was a uniquely diabolical system devised by white racists to torment humble but lovable black people. As you said, the very term slaves is derived from Slavs, which is what the ethnic demographic description of people from southeastern Europe. They were enslaved by the Ottoman Turks. The Barbary pirates raided all European coasts for over 1,000 years, and especially Italy's coast, enslaved entire villages, killed the ones they didn't want as slaves. They put the men to work on galleys, you know, just like you saw in an old movie like, what was it, with Errol Flynn, gosh, what was it? It was about the Armada or whatnot. I'm trying to remember the name of that movie. But then they also, another thing that was done is, that they would turn the women into sex slaves, the men into galley slaves, and kill the ones that weren't fit, in their opinion, for either. But, of course, all that's forgotten. And, of course, those were Africans enslaving Europeans. Now, all of the Africans that were enslaved were captured by other black sub-Saharan Africans, because until quinine was invented as a cure for malaria, the average lifespan of a white European in sub-Saharan Africa was 6 months, just like the American Indians were peculiarly susceptible to European diseases like smallpox. Likewise, Europeans were peculiarly susceptible to subtropical diseases like malaria and dengue fever. So consequently, none of this is as it is portrayed to the average school child today. Basically, slavery has been around forever. White people were enslaved. For example, St. Augustine was moved to evangelize and Christianize the British Isles by the pathetic sight of seeing blonde-haired, blue-eyed English children being sold as slaves in the slave market in Rome. He asked a friend when he saw these peculiar-looking people, "What are these?" And his friend said, "They are Angles, like Anglo-Saxon, okay?" And he said, "No, they're angels, and we will claim them for Christ." That's, read about St. Augustine. You'll read about that. But again, we continue to have this drumbeat of leftist propaganda that says that slavery was a uniquely white-on-black institution, which, of course, it was not. Slavery has existed throughout human history, and everybody's ancestors were enslaved at one point or another in history. The difference is, as I said, everybody except blacks has gotten over it. Blacks continue to nurture this because they apparently think it's a good all-purpose excuse for a lack of achievement in today's world. And people, we've got to get the message out. This is the type of message, what we're giving you ammunition. When you hear some left-wing nincompoop arguing about the effects of slavery being an excuse for affirmative action or for racial preferences in today's world, give them a history lesson about the true nature of slavery and about the true origins of slavery. Again, the slave trade was basically a Jewish enterprise. That's another thing that you're never going to hear. You're going to think that it was all white Gentiles. And, you know, what you were talking about with the Irish, has anybody read the Robert Louis Stevenson's classic Kidnapped? In that particular novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, one of his best, that and Treasure Island, I think, are the two best novels that he wrote. The young protagonist has been sold into slavery. He's been kidnapped, put aboard a boat, which apparently was pretty standard operating procedure back then. People didn't want to be separated from their families for 2 years, which was a typical voyage back then, so they would Shanghai poor white people that lived in the poor part of town. They had what they called the press gang. This was done not only by private interest, it was done by the British Navy. And this fellow had an uncle that wanted to keep him from inheriting the family estate, so he had him kidnapped, and he was going to be sold as what they called a 20-pounder. 20 pounds were what they paid for an indentured servant who for a minimum of 7 years would be working in the New World, probably in North America, harvesting or helping to harvest tobacco or cotton. So, you know, let's get over it, folks.
Well, let's get over this segment. We got a commercial break coming up, and we'll be back with more right after this. Don't go anywhere.
We'll be back right after these messages.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you looking for literature from authors who aren't ashamed of their European-American heritage? Are you looking for books that don't shy away from the forbidden facts? You used to look all over the internet for these books, but you can now find them all at the same place, LighthouseLiterature.com. Whether you're looking for rare classics from the great thinkers or the latest and most popular books from guys like me, Lighthouse Literature is your trusted source for the best books at the best prices. For a limited time, you can get my new book, Racism Schmacism, from Lighthouse Literature for only $10. When you make a purchase from www.lighthouseliterature.com, you're helping support dedicated real-world advocates and activists. So, what are you waiting for? Surf on over to LighthouseLiterature.com, a bright light for the right.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big
girls don't cry. All right, everybody. As he is wont to do, Keith Alexander has once again sullied our studio by bringing in an article from the Memphis Commercial Appeal, a daily publication, the local fish rep that we hope will soon be following the New Orleans Times Picayune out the door and into the dustbin of history. But Keith, what do you got for us tonight?
James is always castigating me about keeping up a subscription to the Commercial Appeal, known affectionately to Memphians as the Communist Appeal. And I don't do it because I support them. I do it because basically the left is constantly lifting their skirt and giving us fodder for our program. That's how the Behind Enemy Lines segment got started. So this is the latest edition of Behind Enemy Lines in Memphis. We're going to let the dulcet tones of James Edwards be the reader here. And here you go, James. Read this article. It's called Report Paints Bleak Picture, front page news on the Saturday, June 8th, 2012, Commercial Appeal in Memphis.
It was actually yesterday's paper, Friday, but here it is, above the fold, page A1. Keith is into sadism and masochism, so he's making me read this. Shelby teens, and Memphis lies within Shelby County, Shelby teens lead state in dropout rate, pregnancy, and poverty. I wonder why. Now, dropout rate, pregnancy, poverty, we lead it. Here we go. Shelby County teens lead the state by far in sexually transmitted diseases, the story reads. They have the highest rate of school suspensions, expulsions, and dropouts, one of the highest rates of teen pregnancies among the 95 counties in Tennessee. And nearly one out of every three Shelby County residents under the age of 18 lives in poverty. This portrait of a troubled area emerges from a report, Kids Count, the State of the Child in Tennessee 2011, released Wednesday by the Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth. I'm really concerned, said Linda O'Neill, the commission's executive director. What the data tells us is that we need to focus on the needs of adolescents as well as children, and that we need to intervene with effective strategies to change their trajectory. Now, I wonder where they're going to get the funding to fund these interventions. In some Memphis communities, it is the social norm to become sexually active at an early age. In some Memphis communities, that sounds like code speak to me, Keith, to become sexually active at an early age. And not to make school a priority, said psychologist Sydney Ordnuff, who oversees mental health services for Shelby County Juvenile Court. She says, many kids don't start school until after Labor Day, which typically means missing 3 weeks of the school year. It's overwhelming, daunting, she said. Now I got to flip the page. So I'm actually going to let Keith flip the page while you ponder everything that we've just read so far, while you try to digest it. Some girls in detention were told, and this is, of course, juvenile detention. Some girls in detention told Ordnuff that their parents were aware that they're sexually active as early as the age of 14, but that they don't often have access to birth control. This goes back to that radical feminist that Rush Limbaugh, you know, got in hot water over calling her a slut. Because, you know, they want, you know, she wants free birth control. Why should she have to pay for birth control? You know, it costs $20 a month, you know. Nearly half the state's teen cases of sexually transmitted diseases are in Shelby County, which is a majority black county. That's where Memphis is. More than 2,500 Memphis teens ages 15 to 17 had reported cases of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, according to State Department of Health data. Shelby County also, which is the blackest county in Tennessee, according to census reports, Shelby County, Tennessee, also has the state's highest school dropout rate. More than 3,000 teens left school in the 2008-2009 school year, the most recent data provided by the Department of Education. That's more than double other counties in the state. Okay, so Keith, what this article is talking about is teenagers in Shelby County, majority black county, having the highest rates of poverty, dropout from school, and sexually transmitted diseases. Why is this? You know, I'm reading this whole article, and I never saw a reference to the emperor with no clothes.
Gee whiz. I guess we're just in have terrible luck over here in Shelby County. I can't understand why, James. Why in the world are we so unlucky that we have all of these bad things happening here? We have sexually transmitted diseases among teenagers in one county. Okay, let me drop the Pee Wee Herman voice and get back to normal. Why do we, one county, have more than twice as many sexually transmitted diseases as the other 94 counties in Tennessee altogether? You know, I guess, and as James said, what a surprise it is to learn that Memphis is the only major metropolitan area in Tennessee that has a majority black population. Shelby County, the only county of any size that has a majority black population. So consequently, all of the social pathologies in the state of Tennessee among teenagers are focused in Memphis. As Gomer Pyle said, surprise, surprise, surprise. You know, this is, you know, when are people going to wake up, like you said, and tell the emperor he has no clothes? Race matters. But of course, Eric Holder's U.S. Justice Department, acting through a black appointed U.S. District Attorney, Ed Stanton, we now have, of course, this is one of the added benefits of living in a majority black city. You're always going to get black appointed officials for government jobs. And of course, he's uncovered the baleful influence of racism at juvenile court, because black kids get prosecuted at a higher rate than white kids. The fact that black kids may be misbehaving more than white kids apparently never crossed the minds of these people. Maybe that's why black kids have sexually transmitted diseases at a much greater rate than all these other counties in Tennessee. Why? You know, it's because the black population is sexually promiscuous and criminally inclined. Duh. You know, when is America going to stand up and take notice of racial differences? Our ancestors did. And trying to blame everything on the lingering effects of slavery that hasn't been legal in America for over 150 years, 150 years plus of freedom, 42 years of affirmative action, and we've still got the same old problems, not only as strong as ever, but even worse than ever. Liberalism has not cured any of these problems. Liberalism has exacerbated these problems. In 1950, the black illegitimacy rate in the United States was 22%. The white illegitimacy rate was 1.5%. After 60 plus years of good old liberalism since the Brown versus Board of Education decision, that's as good a benchmark as any, now the black illegitimacy rate is 72% and rising. And the white illegitimacy rate is now higher than the black illegitimacy rate was in 1950. It's 25%. This is a baleful influence, and if this isn't the ultimate indictment of liberalism, I don't know what is. When are people going to understand that liberalism is the modern face of evil? We keep saying that to people. You got to get the message out.
Well, you asked the question, Keith, and I've got the answer. When are people going to understand? You listen to this show. You listen to this show, and I guarantee you, you don't have to listen for 4 years. You listen to this show for 4 months, and it's going to be the equivalent of a political science doctorate. You're going to get more information than you can use in 4 months of listening to this show than you could get in 4 years of going to college, majoring in political studies. I mean, that's when you're going to realize it, and that's the service that we provide.
Well, I can just picture this Linda O'Neill or this Dr. Sidney, whatever that unpronounceable name is, wringing their hands in true guilty white liberal fashion, wondering what they can do. How much of your money and mine can they spend to get birth control and prophylactics to these people? First of all, black people don't like prophylactics. They say, who wants to take a shower in a raincoat? I've heard that throughout my life. Secondly, it's not $20 to have a month's worth of birth control pills. If you get it through the state, it's $5. But they're making excuses. $5 is an awful lot to somebody in poverty, really. You know how much a rock of crack cocaine costs? At its lowest, it was $25. Five times. You could get 5 months of birth control for the same cost as one rock of crack cocaine.
Where do we go from there, ladies and gentlemen? I don't know, but we'll find out together after these words from our sponsors. Stay tuned. The Political Cesspool continues with James Edwards and Keith Alexander on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We got one more segment with Keith Alexander tonight before we get into the third and final hour, during which we will welcome our featured guests to the broadcast. Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network, and Justin Cottrell. He wrote a new book about serial killers, but perhaps not the kind of serial killers you're thinking of. Stay tuned for that. That's all coming up in the third and final hour. But we still got another big topic to cover this hour. But before we even get to it, Keith Alexander wants to make a final comment on the story we were addressing during the previous segment.
You always have this phenomenon where you think of something. Apparently, the guilty white liberals in Memphis are wringing their hands about the plight of the poor little black folks again, the poor black teenagers. You know, black people apparently didn't even know about sex until evil white people taught them about it. It was we're like the serpent in the Garden of Eden, apparently. So we're responsible for their sexually transmitted diseases, their illegitimacy, and everything else, apparently in the eyes of the left. And, of course, we've got to do something. I love it when a liberal gets in your face and says, what you going to do about it? What you going to do about it? I'm not going to do anything. Just think about it. This is not my problem. It's not the problem of the white community. Believe me, the black isn't interested in trying to solve our problems. It's like getting in front of Al Sharpton and say, what you going to do about affirmative action? The silence would be deafening, James. Now, let's turn, if we can, now to the next topic, which was the one news story that totally dominated conservative talk radio this past week.
Let me, before you even get to that, Keith, let me set the stage for you, my brother, and then I'm going to let you wear it out. My thinking when I saw all of these headlines to which Keith is referring was, all right, this has got to be bogus. Now, why is it bogus? Because they were celebrating as if it were a great victory for conservatives that a certain incumbent governor got reelected. Now, how did I know, without knowing anything about the background of the story, that it was a charade? Well, I used common sense. I have no doubt that across this nation, there are inevitably some low-level state representatives that are probably very good, strict constitutionalists and paleoconservatives. However, once you get up to elected office on a federal level or the top of state government, you're sold out, or else we would have heard about you. Now, you can name maybe on two fingers Ron Paul and Rand Paul, two incumbents that stand out from the crowd. All right. If they were out there, believe me, they would be getting vilified by the mainstream press. And that would mean that there may be something there worthy of support. So when I hear that Scott Walker gets reelected and it's a great victory for the Tea Party, it's a great victory for conservatism, I'm thinking, well, you know what? I haven't seen Scott Walker been denounced as a neo-Nazi, so he must not be too much of a conservative. I haven't seen Scott Walker battle accusations of racism, because this is, you know, these are the baseless terms that they always throw out for good conservative activists in order to denounce them. You know, Mitt Romney gets the neo-Nazi labels because he's going up against Barack Obama, so he kind of gets a special exemption there. If he was just the governor of Massachusetts, he wouldn't, he wouldn't get it. But anyway, I didn't see any of this stuff. I hadn't seen any negative press really about Scott Walker, and so that leads me to believe that he must not be any good. But again, I have not researched this story. I don't know anything about him, but that's just my gut reaction. Keith, what do you know?
Well, I know this. He's a blue stater from one of the bluest of blue states, Wisconsin, the home of Robert La Follette, that so-called progressive candidate back in the 1920s. Now, of course, he's a Republican, and the result of this is that they're floating his name out there as a vice presidential candidate. The Republican Party and the elites, more importantly, in this nation, will do anything to prevent the actual citizenry of red state America from having any say whatsoever in how our government is run. Red states are the only states that cast electoral votes that actually count to get a Republican elected president. But you're seeing this concerted effort to keep red state Americans, even, you know, Casper Milquetoast types like Rick Perry of Texas, Newt Gingrich, people like this. Nobody from Red State America is to get anywhere near the control panel for America. basically, this is why my ancestors and James's seceded from the Union. They were tired of being commissared by people outside the region and having the federal government run by people actively scornful of them, and nothing has changed. Well, they say the more things change, the more they stay the same. Well, Scott Walker, let me give you some of the talking points about his victory. What he did that apparently so outraged the left was that he took on the public employee unions in Wisconsin, suggesting, like Casper Milquetoast, that they contribute a pittance towards the enormous cost of their employee benefit package. And as a result, he was a marked man. They wanted his head on a pike. They did what the left does. They take no prisoners. They wanted to impeach him. And if they couldn't do that, they were going to have a recall election. They had the recall election, and he won. So now he's a big hero. And the point that Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, yada, yada, yada were making was that even that paragon of the left, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was opposed to public employee unions. And that's true. He was. All sane people were back in the day. But what they will not mention, I tried to call two local talk shows here in Memphis, and, I mean, they hit the dump button so fast it'd make your head spin when they found out what I was talking about. Henry Loeb, former mayor of Memphis, the mayor of Memphis during the Memphis sanitation workers' strike.
A good Jewish guy,
by the way. He's a Jew I would have liked to have unleashed on the entire nation. Here is a Jewish guy with an Ivy League education, went to Brown University, who was 6'5" and looked and sounded like John Wayne. And he was a member of my church. He quit the Jewish faith because he got tired of being harangued by Rabbi Wax at Temple Israel, which is the Tony High Society Jewish temple in Memphis, every Sabbath from the pulpit being told how he needed to settle this garbage workers' strike. Just like Scott Walker, just like FDR, he spoke out on this. You never hear about what he said, but I was there in person in the adult education class at St. John's Episcopal Church and heard his presentation. Here's what he said. He said, "The news media is trying to make this into a black-white issue. It's not. It's a labor management issue." He said, "We have a long tradition here in Memphis and in Tennessee of not recognizing public employee unions. I think it's a great tradition." And remember, another talking point they had in the national news was there were no public employee unions until 1959, when the first one was endorsed and recognized in no other place than Wisconsin. Well, in 1968, there weren't public employee unions in Memphis. And Henry Loeb said, "If I give the sanitation workers a union, how can I turn down the police and the firemen? If you have a union, you'll have work stoppages. The public is just too vulnerable to these work stoppages. And furthermore, it will be too easy for politicians to make deals with these unions, get a lot of funding from them, and make improvident deals that are against the interests of the public, because they know those particular politicians that cut the deals won't be around 25 years from now when the chickens come home to roost and all these pensions start coming due." And Henry Loeb was absolutely right. I love his comment about Rabbi Wax. He told us, he said, "Rabbi Wax believes in the separation of church and state, just not the separation of synagogue and state." Amen to that. Henry Loeb, may you rest in peace. Henry Loeb, unlike George Wallace, unlike Ross Barnett, and tons of other segregationists who recanted their evil ways because they're politicians and above all want to be loved and respected, and the only way to be loved and respected in today's America is to weep, wail, and gnash your teeth and rend your garments regarding any conservative position you've ever taken in the past. Henry Loeb never did that. He said to the very end he was right. Let me tell you another story about Henry Loeb and why he is so important. Henry Loeb was in his office when he got a phone call from then Attorney General Ramsey Clark, the nutcase that tried to, free Saddam Hussein just because he was liberal, not that Saddam Hussein deserved his fate That's what happens to people who are allies of the United States in the Middle East, apparently. But nonetheless, Ramsey Clark has been on the far left forever. He was actually Attorney General of the United States when Martin Luther King was shot. He came down, set up a penthouse, a war room up in the Rivermont, and called for Henry Loeb to come down there. Henry Loeb told him he'd have to come to his office. Instead, he came down there, and Henry Loeb greeted him with his feet up on his desk and a shotgun across his lap. Now, that's my type of mayor. He's the last good mayor we've had in Memphis. He was Jewish. My hat's off to him. He was the best there was, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Keith Alexander, a master of discourse, a hero for our people, a man who will be sharing the stage with U.S. Congressman Tom Tancredo in a couple of weeks at the CFCC conference. More on that in the weeks ahead. We got to take a break. We'll be back with our guests tonight during the third and final hour. Stay tuned for that. I'm James Edwards, and I'll see you after the break.